Hello and a very warm welcome to another episode of the Gestalten podcast. My name is Martin Groschwald, and alongside, as always, I have my very, very lovely and very appreciated colleague, Eric Alina. Eric, how are things?
Hey, thank you, Martin. Thank you very much for that welcoming intro. And the feeling is very mutual. But
all right. Now,
I'm doing very well. Very well. I'm ready to get into this next. So this is part two of our podcast of the Geneva No Show. So welcome and thank you very much for joining us.
Yes. So part two, as Eric just mentioned. So if you have not listened to part one, we dealt over there with all the production cars that we felt were worth talking about. Now, part two will be, I think, for us, is always a little bit cooler to talk about the show cars and concept cars that we would have loved to see at the Geneva Motor Show. But unfortunately, of course, it was canceled due to the coronavirus. So a small disclaimer up front, all of the comments that we're doing here are based on cars that we have only seen on pictures or we have seen videos of them, but we have not been able to see them actually in the flesh. So please do not hold that against them or against us in that regard. we will do the best to kind of put them into a very broad and overall and professional review, to put it that way. And long story short, let's crack on. And we will actually start with the Polestar Precept concept, which was actually presented a little bit before the Geneva Motor Show, which would have his first official presence at the Geneva Motor Show, which of course that didn't happen. But this car has received quite a bit of praise from the media, from the car design community, for its development of the Polestar brand. So Eric, what's your take on this praise?
I wholeheartedly agree with everything that is being said in favor of this vehicle, because I really do like where they're going. I do like a lot of the solutions that they've implemented in this all-electric vehicle. So, Polestar at the moment, the first Polestar 1 that was unveiled, where was that thing shown? Was it in Detroit many years ago? Anyway, it was shown under Volvo. It was called a Volvo concept at the time. It was the concept coupe, which was great. It was one of Thomas Ingenlath's first vehicles, which basically pointed the way towards the XC90, which was the first production car off of that design language. But it was very much a Volvo thing, and Volvo took it and ran with it. Max Missoni, obviously, with the exterior design, then Robin Page with the interior. Now that Robin is heading up Volvo in general, and Thomas has moved on to become CEO of Polestar, Max is now the design director of Polestar and still has his toe in the Volvo brand, obviously, as the exterior design director there. What I love about this vehicle, just that background aside, is it's really showing Polestar coming into its own and, very much different than some of the other things that we've seen before. So clearly, Concept One was that, Concept Coupe, the Polestar One, rather. Polestar Two was the little guy that was shown off, quite robust, very, I think, different from a typology perspective. It was a crossover, certainly, but, it had a robust nature and it was very well received. And I particularly like that vehicle. And now we're coming into something that is the big saloon class. But for Polestar, they've done something very different. Clearly, I think it's very contemporary. It's very modern. It's at the same time, it's sensual, even though it's very technologically there. It's super contemporary from a design and very modern, right? But it's also extremely sustainable in a lot of the elements that they're using within the interior and things of that nature. What I love about it, I think, is the new DRG, right? The Volvo also, they have these two lines, the Thor's hammer, and that's very much coming to the fore in this, which is again, a different example than what Volvo's showcased in their Thor's hammer. So I think it's showing Volvo really coming into its own. And that
Polestar.
Is
Polestar.
Polestar, I should coming. Say. I keep doing that. it ticks all the boxes, all the right boxes, right? It's not the son of Volvo. It's identified its own design language. It's carving out its own place in the electric car segment. And, you know, I think from a surfacing perspective, it's very modern and sweet. You know, it still has these kind of sharp edges, you know, but also it's really very much a Swedish, dare I say, kind of design language, right? I like how they're dividing the body from kind of the technical underpinnings through these different colorways. Showing this vehicle in white is really quite a good choice as well, because then you can get to see all of the different sensors and things that are kind of embedded within what would normally be the grille now. So it's a different take on, you know, showcasing this technology, but also if you just look at the front face of that car, there's numerous innovations, right? There's a lot of elements that are influenced directly from aerodynamics, and aerodynamics massively important in an electric vehicle, with this kind of, you know, front spoiler, if you will, which is, it's more of a wing because it sits atop the hood and therefore guides air over the body. And then at the rear, you've got this almost, you know, horizontal backlight. There is no actual backlight on the car. It's actually part of the roof. So that, I think it's super cool. I don't know how that affects rearward visibility. My assumption is that you're not even going to care because all of these cars in terms of, you know, side view mirrors and rear view mirrors are all now turning electric. So you've got camera-based systems within these vehicles. So I think from an aesthetic perspective, the exterior of this vehicle, they've done a really, really good job, you know, and the interior also, you know, really speaks to the sustainability aspect and the fact that they are working with some partners that are, you know, leaders in their field to show more sustainable materials, the user interface as well. Very simple, minimalistic, very clean. And I think it's definitely, you know, when I first saw it, I was like, wow, this is amazing. And, you know, I really, really like a lot of the messages that it's conveying, certainly in terms of the sustainability aspect, right? Certainly in terms of saving weight, you know, the composites that are being used, a reduction of plastic waste, the recycling of, you know, PET bottles, the reclaimed fishing nets. I mean, all of these things, it's really, 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 really nice. And again, you know, I like where Polestar is going from a colorway perspective, you know, with the orange mirror, seat belts and things like that, the little flags. You know, I think they're doing a lot in terms of moving the game on for electric vehicles because, let's face it, Tesla's been the leader in this segment for a long time. And I don't think that they really have managed to differentiate themselves from other, you know, designs in communicating their electric significance or underpinnings. I wouldn't necessarily say that's imperative. You don't need to. Clearly, people don't want to have something that stands out and that's too weird. They'd rather have something that just has a lot of really cool technology, but is pretty. And I think the Polestar Precept definitely is carving out a niche for itself in that area because it's really very well done, very nice.
You see, I'm not sure if I agree with that. I think for me, if I look into, especially the exterior, it's still, you know, not transpiring the technology as, for example, a Tesla does. Yeah. It's from a pure aesthetics perspective. What I do like is the side view. I like the rear. I mean, you've mentioned the lights, and that looks really cool. I have to say, though, I'm not sure about the front. This is what I was really looking forward to in Geneva, because I remember I sent you, I think it was a text message or we had a quick phone call. I was just like, I want to see that front in real life. I'm not a major fan of the lights. It's still, for me, like, you know, the upper part of the lights is very much Ferrari-esque. The lower lights is very Volvo in that sense. I was hoping a little bit they could play a bit more like that, like, you know, find out their way. I'm not mad at it, you know, at all. I think it's a very well-rounded exterior, but I think they could have been a bit more progressive. Ingelad, of course, said that this is close to what the future Polestars will be like, so I expect this to be closer to production than we might think.
Oh yeah.
But a lot of this, what a lot of people, you know, have made it is new. The LiDAR systems being seen on the top of the roof is something that Byton has shown a year ago. Mm. That's not necessarily anything that is new and exclusive to Polestar.
I mean, that's probably the only element that's a bit jarring, is that, you know, having that spaceship like thing over. But
that's okay. I want to say
necessary.
I understand that, you know, but what I found a little bit challenging, but maybe that's just me, but I would love to hear from other people about this as well. If you look into the seat belts, for example, the seat belts and the buckles actually, you know, have this imprint. I think it says like since 1950. Which is a question for me, is like, is this still a Volvo?
Does it really?
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It does. Okay. It's actually like, you know, there was one really close up and it says like since 1950, like, you know, and it's like, why would you do that if you want to separate it from a Volvo? Like, it's not a cohesive kind of direction for me. What I do, however, like is, I like the seats. I think they have a great kind of development to them. I just like the way they look at. They look very comfortable. I like the armrest in the rear as well, you know, to have this kind of very comfortable feeling with that. What I would challenge, and I would love to try it out, is if that infotainment system really works. Because, you know, if you watch the video, they have shown that, you know, if the closer you get with your finger, so the screen changes and it becomes almost like a haptic system. So, you know, when you take your interaction method, which is usually your finger, away, it becomes a big screen that shows the necessities that you have. So probably, you know, your navigation system and all these things. And the closer you get with your finger, that's when you interact and buttons come up. Mm. Now, my question is that really safer than, you know, other systems that could be out there? Because if I have to put my finger there and I have to look where I have to press, is this actually a method that, you know, that is very user friendly? It's something that you have to try out, especially you have to try it out while driving. On a concept, I understand where they're coming from, but I would not want to kind of, you know, overly celebrate the whole thing, because there are some elements that I would question if they would work like that, or if it's just a kind of a nice idea to come out with it. What I would like to say, and this is very interesting, if you look back into the Volvos when they first started off under Ingelad, they clearly had a very strong emphasis on exterior design. And if you then really, you know, drove the production version of the XT60, 40, all these things, the interior was a bit of a letdown in terms of quality. This looks much more comprehensive. I think, you know, the way they are now looking into what the future of Polestar could be looks much more comprehensive as a whole. And in terms of the quality that they might be using, looks much more interesting and a much more higher quality than maybe what Volvo is. I mean, I think they mentioned this openly as well in an article, that their focus was on the exterior of the Volvo in the beginning, just to kind of get, you know, the presence back again onto the streets. And I hope that at Polestar, they have now come to a point where they say, now it really lives on the inside. And I see very good directions from that. For me, the exterior, and what I expect nowadays from both Ingelad and also Max Mizzoni is spot on. You know, it's very good, but I would have been very disappointed if it wouldn't be, because of the standard they have set for themselves. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how far they can go with that, how far they can push for it, because it's very promising. I really like it a lot. Like I said, I want to see the front at some point in the flesh. But it's certainly a very interesting direction, very, very positive, and not my favorite that would have been at the show from what I've seen so far, but definitely one of the better concept cars that they have done.
Yes. No, I definitely agree. I mean, and I think, like you say, I think it is very close to production. You know, I don't think that this is going to be very far off when it does come out. So, yeah, I mean, chapeau to the guys over at Polestar and indeed at Volvo, because it's the same team, I think.
So, exactly.
They're doing very well.
All right. Now, second one on our list that we think is very much worth mentioning is from a company that traditionally has had very great concept cars, but has always struggled a little bit with production cars. Now, the Renault Morphos, is that how you spell it? Morphos, or, you know, pronounce
Morphos,
it? I don't know.
Morphos.
Yeah. Was presented. There were some very early leaks on this as well, but now we have seen everything about it. And yeah, as the name suggests, this thing can morph. The wheelbase can morph as well. But I would have to say it's probably one of the weaker show cars, concept cars that Renault has shown over the past few years. I was quite a bit underwhelmed when I saw the pictures.
Oh, really? Well, that is completely the opposite sentiment that I have.
All right, then let's go. Okay, you go first. And then...
I do really, really like this car. It's a concept, so, you know, it's not real. But I love where they're going or what they're thinking about. You know, there's so many really cool elements within this vehicle. And that are, I would say, you know, pretty much... and very, very relevant. Now, this isn't something that is brand new, but obviously it's a morphing concept, right? The fact that it can transform from 4,400 millimeters long, and then it can extend something like 407 millimeters overall in the length. The wheelbase itself extends a little bit less than that, but nonetheless, it adds some length to the rear, so you can put additional luggage. It also adds some length to the wheelbase, therefore improving rear seat legroom. And at the same time, whilst it's doing that, you can then bring it to some dedicated, platform system where there's an additional 50 kilowatt hours of batteries that can be placed within the platform, so therefore more than doubling the kilowatt hour battery available, because the standard is like a 40 kilowatt hour battery pack. So effectively you're going to have 90 kilowatt hour battery pack, and the range is going to be quite extensive as well. Now again, this is a bit fictional, as you mentioned. You know, Renault is always great in terms of putting out concept cars, and I love the work that they do there. But let's face it, in recent times, some of these cars that they've shown have not been as relevant, I would say, in terms of what is happening in society today. Last year, for example, the Ultima, right? Like, how relevant is that? You know, super luxury, like 3-passenger, 7-meter long. Maybe I'm exaggerating.
Especially
a bit.
Especially for someone like Renault. Renault is not
exactly
super luxury.
Right? For Renault, like, to me, this, you know, this Morphos is far more tackling the issues that we're facing now, right? We need compact mobility to get around in cities. We need electrification. Also, we might want to take those cars on a longer trip, but hey, we don't want to lug around a huge battery pack all the time, or have indeed a very large, long vehicle, because if anybody's ever driven in Paris, that's the last thing you want, is like a Bentley-sized Mulsanne driving around in Paris. It's just, you know, where are you going to park it? So, you know, that's the thing. Even if you do have a chauffeur, you don't, you know, getting around in narrow streets in Rome and in Paris and even in London, I mean, there isn't that much space in European cities. So Renault coming up with this vehicle that can shapeshift, effectively get to be much longer, fit more people or more luggage, and make the passenger compartment more spacious. At the same time, you know, if you look into the detail and how it is that they've done this, because it's important to actually say, this isn't the first time Renault has explored this, right? I mean, if you look back to 20 years ago almost, they had a concept called the Renault Zoom, and that was done in collaboration with Matra. And it was like, it basically had it looked like a bug. It had these two legs in the back where the wheels were. And then when you wanted to have it driving around, it could lengthen itself. So therefore lower itself on the rear legs and extend itself, providing a longer wheelbase and more comfort therefore. But the cabin stayed pretty much the same in terms of the overall volume. But what it did do when you got up to a parking space, those rear wheels would tuck themselves in below the cabin, therefore basically turning the vehicle into something half its size, so you could park it more easily. So the footprint was considerably smaller when driving around in urban areas, and that is basically what Renault is doing with this Morphose concept. But I think aesthetically how they've done this, if you look at the way that everything kind of meshes together into the rear bumper, I mean, the whole DRG transforms on the front of that car. The headlamps change whilst it's changing and lengthening. And I think that is just a brilliant piece of that design. You know, the fact that it's so intricate, like, look, it's, like I said, it's completely fictional. It's a flight of fancy, but why not? So was a lot of the other things that were shown in recent times. But this is going to be, an extremely costly show vehicle that is not going to make production. But it makes you think, you know, what if there is, you know, a way to basically come out with a car that can lengthen and retract based on the user's needs, the cabin that can shift positions if you want to create a more social environment where you want to have some dialogue between the occupants. And then the way the whole kind of screen folds out if you want to access some of the information that's there. Like, these are things that we're seeing on like mobile phones, for example, right now. You know, people that are like looking into ways of maximizing functionality, but minimizing the intrusion in terms of like the visual intrusion. But anyway, I think it's a really, really nice proposition there.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, I think it's just something, it just doesn't give me anything. You know, I don't find it, I just don't find it an aesthetically very pleasing object. You know, I understand that with, you know, changing the wheelbase, you know, obviously lengthening the car come certain kind of restrictions. And I think the rear is much better solved than the front bit that's getting longer. Yeah, that's one thing. But at the same time, it's just, it looks like a very dystopian and disorderly future. I just don't find it a thing that I want to see on the road driving ahead of me. You know, this looks like almost like a negative and a very scary Blade Runner like future in that sense. The interior as well is like, you know, the seats are yellow, but it doesn't necessarily look like a very comfortable place to ride in. You know, everything is very edgy. Everything is very sharp. It's certainly modern. I do understand that, but it's also, it's not very welcoming. When I looked back into the Easy Pro, for example, I had a much better feeling about that. I was like, yeah, I want to go in there. And I could see this really becoming a utility vehicle. Whereas with this one, it seems there's too much. Then on the one hand, there's edginess. Then there's just the softness and the round, the wheelbases, of course. And it's just so like so many things happening at the same time. The lights are so strong, you know, it seems like they have used like more and more Renault logos to kind of multiply in the lights so that, you know, they get a certain, I don't know, like, you know, a branding image through that. I just don't get warm with it. It just doesn't make me like from a personal perspective, I don't want to look at it. You know, it's just like, I don't want to just like, oh yeah, this looks cool. It looks like a weird, maybe futuristic Land Rover or something like that, but nothing where I was just like, oh, I would really enjoy, you know, seeing that on a road or, you know, even seeing that on a show floor. It's just more like, yeah, okay, I see it, but then I don't have to go and like look at it again because it's kind of offensive. You know, that's my very personal view, and I can only put that from an emotional perspective. And I understand that certain kind of technologies they require, you know, have have a certain kind of way they have to look, but it's just not a very pleasing, aesthetically pleasing concept for me. And that's why I said it could be so much better. I think Renault has shown that they can, you know, show concepts that have been very aesthetically pleasing, but also very complex. This is not necessarily my cup of tea, I have to say.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I can see definitely like a little bit of Land Rover in there, you know. But overall, I think this is one of the stars of the show. And I do love, you know, the use of color, the way that, you know, obviously they're taking a very popular typology of vehicle in the SUV and making it even more kind of practical. You've got this compact, you know, short urban kind of, you know, little guy wanting to explore the city and do all of that. Mm-hmm. And then you've got this longer, more, you know, comfortable, travel friendly companion as well. So I think it's very well done. Personally, this is one of the stars of the show for me, for sure. Of the no show. Yeah.
But, of the no show. the Geneva yeah, no show.
It's all a right. shame that we didn't get to see it in person, because watching this thing kind of go through the motions is probably, would have been a very, very cool thing to see in person.
Yeah. All right. Now, what we both thought, however, was quite cool, maybe a bit misplaced in terms of the brand, but this is something I would like to discuss with you, is the Hyundai Prophecy.
Ah, yes.
And we saw teasers about this with the lights, and the first thing I was like, oh, they're doing a 911. And the second thought was, why is this not a Genesis? So
yeah.
Now that we have seen all the pictures, we have seen all, you know, all the reveals around this as well. I say I like this thing. There's tiny bits and pieces that I don't enjoy, but I'm still asking the question, why is this not a Genesis?
Mm. Well, I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, that is a good question. I don't have an answer. You know, I think, yeah, I mean, if I look at this car, objectively speaking, you know, or even subjectively, I should say, Hyundai is still very much, I think, in the stage where they're firing a shotgun, you know, and a shotgun is not a 9mm hollow point, right? It's not a very specific bullet. When you hit a target with a shotgun, it just disperses all over the damn place and you end up getting shrapnel all over the damn target. So this is, to me, Hyundai still trying to figure out where it is that they want to go. Because if you look at what they showed in, now it could be, you know, a bit different certainly than what the Concept 45 was. It could be that they were just exploring at that point, you know, providing an homage to the original vehicle created by Jujaro back in the day when, you know, Hyundai was still trying to figure out what to do with their first car. And then, and so I get that. Okay, Concept 45. But Concept 45, that interpretation is kind of the polar opposite of this Prophecy. Polar opposite, you know, from a surfacing perspective, even from an interior perspective, like design-wise. I mean, this, like what Donkervolk said in that very, very famous video that's been circulating, seeing as they had no press conference, there's about a 16-minute video going around circulating, and the good part is about halfway through when Luke starts talking about the actual design of the vehicle. There's been smaller videos as well showing Simon and Sang-Yup talking about the car as well. Now, their video is more, I don't know, marketing, whereas Luke kind of gives us more of a raison d'être behind this vehicle. And he talks about something in particular that is really, was my favorite part. And he talks about like the 20s and the 30s and how back then it was kind of a more optimistic future, you know, looking into what could be created and all of this. You know, it was very opportunistic time within the industry. Now, I think that what they've done clearly is they've meant to showcase some of these same levels of enthusiasm and the future optimism as the 1920s and 1930s era streamline cars, but in a more abstract way. I mean, it is very much, you know, a flowing, pleasing pebble shape, because they do note that that was part of the influence, was this black pebble. But then the interior is also kind of juxtaposed against that, and a bit jarring as well, if I do say, with the colors and the, you know, certainly the way that they've chosen to go about this aesthetically. And then there's kind of the whole joystick thing, which I'm like, eh, you know, is that going to be really worthwhile? Like, is that useful? Mm. Is that even like, or is that just sci-fi? Like, just because, you know, designers like sci-fi. But I mean, I don't know. I think the interior kind of works in a weird way with like these woven fabrics and these animated patterns. And, you know, it just kind of looks a bit old school, but also very modern. I mean, that's the thing. It's like with fashion, you know, you get this recycling of, you know, fashion kind of comes and goes, like stuff that was fashionable in the 70s or the 80s is now back trendy. And that's kind of what I feel with when I look at this. But again, if I'm looking at the exterior, like, you know, the front end of that car, the front face, the headlamps in particular, all of that is like really, really cool. You know, the tail lamps and the headlamps. So the DRG of this car is really quite interesting. But then you've got this flowing form, which, yes, I mean, certainly has a lot of Porsche in it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no doubt that, you know, some people were within the studio, within the design team, were looking at maybe the new, maybe not the Panamera, but, you know, the new little electric guy and saying, hey, you know, we quite like this, you know, what Porsche has done with the Taycan. So, you know, maybe we should do something similar with Hyundai. I don't know. I don't know if that even crossed their mind. I'm just speculating over here, but it is very much, it does have a lot of Porsche to it, save from the front and the rear end, which is way more unique than anything that we've seen in recent times. So I don't know. I like it. It's not a bad car. I do wish that they hadn't chosen black, because black, especially if you're just looking at pictures as we are, is really difficult to read any type of detail or any type of, you can't really tell surface changes, things like that. I mean, you're just looking at a pretty picture, but I like the concept. Whether it's wearing the wrong badge, I don't know, but I do like it.
Yeah, I think especially seeing the Essentia, you know, this would have been for me personally more a Genesis car. Mm. Just because of that kind of style. I mean, if you look back into the part one where we were talking about the GV80, you know, you think about, okay, it's a very free flowing form. It's very, you know, very simple lines, very few lines. So for me, like, you know, it just matches the Genesis language a little bit better. Mm. Now, it's certainly and very, very heavily influenced by a Porsche. And also, I think, you know, similar to that G80 that they have shown from Genesis, also by this A7 Walter da Silva language. You know, it's almost like a fastback again, very similar in terms of the free-flowing lines, very beautiful, very simple. This one has, you know, compared to in part one, much better wheels, I have to say. Mm. That looks much better. I'm not so sure about the rear. I was expecting, when I saw the lights, I was like, whoa, incredible. But now that I see the pictures, it's almost like a too much of a cut between the rear line and the D pillar, and then when the lights come in. I can understand, like, you know, they want to push for something. They want to try something very new. It's almost a little bit too extreme for me in the difference of beauty and then this kind of hardcore lighting system. When the light is obviously on and you're in the dark, it looks pretty cool. Mm. What I find a little bit ridiculous is that spoiler. I think it could have done well without the spoiler, or, you know, in a different kind of setup. I think that's just, you know, it looks like a plastic piece that you just put on top. I don't know. Like, you know, this looks like it was added like last minute and somebody was not able to, I don't know, paint it. Mm. Yeah, it just looks a little bit out of proportion. And what I do, however, like is the interior in general. So I think from what I understand, the exterior was done in Korea. The interior was actually done in Germany, in the studio there. So I like the direction that this goes to, this kind of you know, joystick steering system is a very interesting model. I don't think, you know, it would be better based for a video game rather than for a real car. But what it means is that the steering wheel is still there, but, you know, it's not in that sense. So it gives you so much more what you can do with the screen. You can see almost like a Byton-esque, you know, 40-inch or whatever it is screen on there. And because you don't have the steering wheel in the middle, you can use that screen completely differently. You know, you don't need to have the you know, the speedometer in the same place as you would have when the steering wheel would be right in front of you. Your seating position can change. It's a very interesting concept behind it. Now, if this would actually work in the real life, I would love to see that in like a testing environment. I'm pretty sure something like this could happen, but from a conceptual point of view, it's very, very, very interesting. But still, like I said, I think if this, I personally think if this would have been a Genesis car, it just would have fit the brand a little bit better, you know. Because I, for me, you know, when we look at Hyundai is not on this kind of luxury or like premium market. It's more in the middle, yeah. And this looks like
it's
aiming a little bit higher
in the States. Yeah.
Yeah. So in the States, it's low end. Yeah. So I would have even be happy to have something like this as a Stinger development at Kia, for example. I could have lived with that much better, but I just don't see, like, as nice as the concept is, but where would this concept be in an actual lineup in Hyundai? Whereas with Kia and of course Genesis, I could see that a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, like I said, I like some of where it is that they're going, you know, what technology is enabled, particularly in terms of the headlamps and the tail lamps. I like that. That's new. That's interesting. That's fresh. That's modern. The interior, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that's a complete pipe dream. It's like, you know, why show something with a joystick? But, you know, they have their arguments for it. Why not? But, yeah, I think the interior of the or rather the exterior of the car is more kind of, you know, cool eye candy stuff going on, and I think that's where the focus pretty much was in terms of creating these you know, head and tail lamps as they are using this this technology. But I don't know, I mean, it's, I think it's nice. I think it's also, you know, like you say, maybe a bit like, you know, dumpy at the rear end where it doesn't. But again, I'm judging based on pictures of a black car. Like, that's really, really difficult to do. But I do like the spoiler. I do kind of wish that I knew a bit more about what was happening within that. So, you know, but I don't have as many details as I'd like regarding, you know, why it is that they've chose to make it this transparent plexiglass, or indeed what's going on with the intricate, you know, detailing and pattern within it. I mean, does that serve a purpose? Is it just to look cool? Because it kind of looks like an EQ, you know, like maybe that lights up that in some cool way. I don't know. But I don't know. I mean, I like the fact that it's this transparent glass, because it's completely, you know, you can then see it very, you know, it stands out from the rest of it, right? Because otherwise, it would just be a black pebble. So
exactly.
Anyway, yeah.
But still, like, we have to say we like this. Yeah. So obviously we can always find some little bits and pieces that we don't enjoy, but we do like this very much. I have to say, from my personal perspective. Now, what I do not like very much is this horrendous BMW i4 concept. We were all hoping that they could fix what they've shown in Frankfurt, where they have shown this really nice, what was it? Was it an i4 as well, or whatever concept car it was, where it just had the horrendous front, but the rear and the side was actually really nice. So we had a big, big hope for BMW to come up with something really cool.
I really like the coupe. The one that was shown in Frankfurt was very, very nice.
Me too.
And this, is kind of another take on that for coupe that we saw in Frankfurt.
Look, let's be, I'm going to be honest. I know I get, you know, people at BMW have come back to me as well about this. You know, yes, we might have a little bit of this image of BMW bashing, but look, they had everything in Frankfurt. They just had to finish, you know, fix up the front a little bit. And what are they doing? It's look, it's not a great car. And I think, you know, they're not helping themselves with the color in particular. It's a color that was used for another concept, you know, I think the CS concept already. I personally don't think it looks good. You know, I think brown or bronze cars should not exist. Because it just, just to put it out there, you know, brown oftentimes looks like a pile of shit. It's just the way it is. And when you put that onto a car, it's very difficult to make that work. So it's just a very difficult color that you have to look at. But it's also the entire car for me is not very original. You know, the rear is something that we have seen in elements already on the BMW i8, and that car is what, 10 years old now. The front, I'm really not a fan of these massive kidneys. And when you have an electric car, you don't need the kidneys to be that massive. You can solve it differently. I just think that, you know, they had so much potential, and I know that the designers that have worked on it have worked very, very hard on this as well. The interior is much better than the exterior, but I think the direction that the general BMW is continuing to go also holds back really the quality of the designers that you have, not as much on the interior at the moment, but massively on the exterior.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of this. Now, I wouldn't say that I'm, you know, BMW bashing. I own a BMW, damn it. I just wish they could come back to what it is that they've done. In the past, I think, you know, they were leaders. Now it just seems, I don't know, man. I really do think that, you know, if Hyundai had come up with something like this, maybe we wouldn't be kind of so, you know, critical of it. But to me, I think it looks dumpy, man. The problem here, and I'll qualify that, what I mean by that is that there's just too much bulk, too much weight into the lower half of this vehicle, from the hood, from the body side, and certainly from the rear. It looks like it's got a fat ass. I mean, especially if you look at this thing from a profile, you know, okay, yes, you want to make the DLO dynamic, you want to make it plunging down towards the front and all of that good stuff, but then you end up with this massively high deck lid where you just have to make everything else kind of adapt. So proportionally, I think it's off. Again, like I'm sorry to say this, because I do really like the exterior designer. I remember her project at Forza many, many years ago, which was absolutely incredible. And I do wish, and that's the reason she got the job at BMW, because then BMW design director Chris Bangle brought her in and said, you need to work for me. She had some very innovative ideas. This is not innovative. This is like, I just don't, you know, get what it is that they're looking to do, especially when you look back in the history of the iBrand, right? These were revolutionary vehicles. I mean, i3, i8, those were incredible from a design perspective. Whereas this one, you know, is, I mean, it's not as nondescript as a DS, but in concept form, like, come on, guys, like, this could be so much better than it is. Like, look, not the grill is the thing, is the topic on everybody's plate right now. Everybody's like talking about how big the BMW's grills have gotten and all of that. And, you know, that is obviously a question of brand identity. Yeah. And I mean, I don't like it, but I do understand what it is that they're, you know, that is how they communicate. Yes, I'm a BMW, but they used to do it more elegantly in the past. And certainly you still knew that you were looking at a BMW, especially during the Bangle times. And, you know, I'm not going to harp on that too much, but, you know, he did during his tenure create something that was universally lauded, or sorry, very much disapproved of and critiqued at the time. But then now we're seeing so many companies that had subsequently jumped out on the bandwagon emulating what it is that Chris kind of initiated over there at Bangle now at BMW. So BMW, you know, is a brand with an incredible pedigree, and it's a real shame to see it. And I don't want to be like, you know, saying that I'm BMW bashing, or in fact that I'm a BMW fanboy, but it doesn't seem, or a Bangle fanboy rather, but it does seem that things have kind of taken a dive over there, and not for the better, clearly. But I do want to address one of the things that you mentioned, which is the color. Now, the color, my first car was brown, right? But it was also a 1973 Lincoln. So that's a bit different, right? And again, it's like coming back to my what I was mentioning earlier, in terms of fashion and recycling. Like, we have seen brown make a comeback. This particular kind of beige looking color is something that we have seen in recent BMW concepts as well. Remember that 7, the massive thing. So I think if you're now unable to attend auto shows and having to be a desktop critique, you know, looking at these images of the concept cars revealed, this is probably the better color to showcase your vehicle in, just because you can actually read surface changes. You can actually read a lot of the elements of the design, certainly, you know, the exterior design. And so I can't, you know, I'm not mad at this, but also, you know, and this is, again, moving into moving into the interior, copper is the electric conductor, therefore very much on trend at the moment in terms of being on every single electric vehicle in some form. And I think the interior of the car is actually quite nice. I do wish that it was, you know, less screen in your face, more rounded, but technically, and that's pretty much what they're showcasing, is this technology aspect, technology. It's readily apparent within the interior of this car, which in my opinion is far more successful than the exterior design, rather.
Oh yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, it clearly takes some inspiration also from Mercedes. If you look into the screen in particular, it's a very Mercedes-esque size of a screen, which I am certainly not mad about, because I like that MBUX system and I like the setup that they have over there. And it also looks very clean. I mean, it almost looks for me that, you know, the interior is much more sophisticated. It seems like, you know, there's a much better thinking of, you know, what does a BMW stand for? And I mean, you know, this is an I model, so it's not an M model that needs to be ultra aggressive and all these kind of things. So I like the colors as well. I'm not a big fan of copper myself, but the combination with the white, I'm quite happy to look at. That's certainly not the point. So definitely well done on the interior team on that one, and also on the color and trim team. Apart from the exterior color, I don't like that. I can't live with that. That's just terrible. But that's just me personally. But what I found really sad about this is it pretty much looks like a 4 or 5 series that has been IE-fied, if you know what I mean. You know, it looks like we take the elements that, you know, the team around Benoît Jacob built when BMW i was truly in existence, and, you know, when they started to do the i3 and the i8, and they've literally just put copy and paste on a bad Photoshop these elements onto the car, and they've then just kind of tried to work it out in that sense. And that's just what I find so disappointing about this exterior, because all these people that they have at BMW, they're so talented, you know. And I don't know if this has to do with nobody properly speaking up, or, you know, I don't know if you know what the hierarchy work or is like at BMW internally to make these kind of decisions. But I don't think that, you know, the brand will survive based on design. It will survive based on the name and that the people enjoy it. But how long can that go ahead without a design going on the same level? Because it's been, you know, quite some time now that we had quite a bit of disappointment from BMW. And something's missing there. You know, I don't know if this is the feeling. And I know that Van Hooijdonk has said multiple times, oh, you know, other markets like it. But do they really? That's the question. I'm not quite sure. And the sales numbers don't always say the same thing that he does. So it's going to be interesting to see that they can hopefully move it forward. And then coupe that they have in Frankfurt, apart from the front, we all like that. Everybody did, you know, so they're not far away from each other. They just have to maybe become, you know, a little bit more listening to the people around them, in my opinion. But who are we to judge? You know, we're not the decision makers at BMW.
No, but it doesn't seem like the design team is much either.
And that's a completely different problem. But I don't think that the design team has actually anything to say in the decision making. I think, you know, they're being told what they do, and that's what they do. Yeah, there's not. It doesn't look like there's a lot of challenging happening there. But let's move on. Last but not least of the concept cars that we wanted to talk about in this part two of the Geneva No Show. Let's talk about the DS Aerosport Lounge concept. In part one, we kind of ripped apart the DS9. Eric, what do you think of this one?
Well, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say I ripped apart the DS9. I just, it's nondescript.
Let's say we were disappointed.
It's nondescript to me. Yeah. I mean, and this thing, you know, is an SUV. So clearly a very successful typology. They say that it is not a typology, an SUV, but it is an SUV. They call it an Aerosport Lounge, and that's fine. But it's definitely, you know, it's got some SUV coupe undertones, clearly. Now, I mean, I don't know. It's a big car. You know, I think personally, like exterior wise, like meh, whatever. I mean, there's again some aero elements going on with the hood, just like in the Polestar Precept. But here, it seems like they're less well resolved with these little wings kind of hanging over the front sections of the hood. I do like what it is that they've done in terms of, you know, breaking up the volumes from a color perspective, right? It's two tones. So they've got this kind of black main element to the body, which is then, you know, and we've seen this before in other vehicles and other concepts, especially where there's this other kind of second skin, if you will, going around the car in a different color. And that's kind of the feel that I get looking at this this Aerosport Lounge concept. So yeah, it's not bad in that sense. But then in the interior, and this is something that I guess criticism that I can levy against the Lagonda SUV as well, or certainly more recent Lagonda concepts, it's that when you look inside, and this thing has a lot of really interesting materials from a sustainability perspective on the interior, it just looks dated. It looks like, you know, something you could find in, like, you know, maybe, you know, some five-star hotels in the 1970s in terms of the overall aesthetic and decor of the interior of these vehicles. And this one in particular, you know, I'm sure they were influenced by some high-tech hotels, some, you know, really luxurious spaces. But to me, it's like, there's a lot of things that I guess would add additional weight, which are kind of unnecessary. And then their overall feel, you know, when you're looking at the interior in particular, is not one of future. It's more, you know, like I said, 1970s. Technology aside, if you look at this entire concept, it's not all that much, like, you know, future oriented, right? If you take out the screens in the grill or in the IP, for example, it's not like, you know, this could have been launched, what, like 5 years ago. I mean, it's not like it's particularly innovative, and which is a shame, again, because DS has the potential to really be something quite quite interesting. But yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of this car from an exterior design perspective either. You know, I just think that, I don't know. I mean, I don't really know why somebody would want this type of vehicle. But again, I'm not the buyer. Yeah. Maybe some people would find this exciting and interesting. To me, it just, I don't know. It just doesn't.
I think it comes back a little bit to the conversation we had with the DS9 as well. There's very little that connects it to the original DS. And that's what I find very challenging about this is, you know, like when I think about DS, I think about soft lines, I think about beauty, you know, I think about simplicity, but, you know, at the same time, a very sophisticated kind of way of dealing with car design. And this one just doesn't seem like that. You know, it seems very edgy. It seems very aggressive in the shapes. The shapes, you know, seem quite quite hard rather than soft. It's very straight rather than, you know, more curved. Also from the pictures that we see, there's always a lot going on. So sometimes you have, you know, some kind of curvature, then it goes directly back into like a really hard line. I found that sometimes just like, you know, aesthetically quite difficult. Like either make it very hard as it, in general, or just make it soft. But like, you know, finding that middle way. And if we look back to the Hyundai, for example, you know, they were all around very soft. So that has worked out very nicely. The Polestar, I would say in general, had a little bit of a harder touch to it because it is the modern kind of way of doing things, but it was very consequent in the way of how it did it, you know. And this one has a little bit of both, but it doesn't really match the entire thing. Where it is consequent is that it's the same on the interior. So the seats look very, you know, edgy as well, very, you know, geometrical, very like, you know, triangular in that regards rather than like soft. You know, like a soft touch to it. So I'm personally just not a fan of that. I like these kind of more, you know, well-rounded and more beautiful and simplistic shapes rather than these, you know, hardcore cut-off edgy shapes. And for me, it's just like, I don't know where DS wants to go with this. I mean, you know, also with the DS9, with this concept, what is the plan? What is the picture that the company or like the brand wants to build? With Citroen, I see that much clearer. With Peugeot, I see that much clearer. With this one, I just don't know. There's the clear picture missing. And that's the sad thing about it. You know, it's like, you know, I just don't know what they want to show with what they want to show us with that.
Yeah. I think this is more of a showcase of, you know, materials. I think in my perspective, it's more, you know, what can we do in terms of utilizing some, you know, really commonplace kind of material, like straw, for example, to make it much more of a luxury element. And that to me is, you know, really quite cool. You know, again, there's a sustainability story here, which is, from that material, that perspective, it's on par with what we've seen out of Volvo. They just didn't take it far enough, right? You know, the technology as well is also another thing that they're trying to showcase within this vehicle from a luxury perspective. You know, the screens, the virtual, you know, ultrasound and all of the rest in terms of like getting some tactile feedback within this interior. You know, bringing it, making it more human centric. I mean, DS, like Citroën, is all about like comfort, right? And I mean, that's what it was. That's what it started out as. But it, to me, it just doesn't, it's not as inviting as some of these other concepts that we've covered. Certainly not the Polestar thing, which is more modern, more futuristic. This one is more claustrophobic, if I say so. You know, even in a 5 meter long vehicle, it just doesn't feel as open as airy. Maybe that's not what they were going for. Maybe it's more the, you know, cosseting style environment they were looking for. I don't know, but yeah. I'm just not the biggest fan, and it is a shame because to me this doesn't resonate at all.
No, and it's something that I just to kind of finish this off, I think if you look back to the E10's concept back in 2000, I think it was 16. The green car, which was the exteriors done by Bob Romkes. It was a much more, you know, cohesive and coherent picture that they were building. They still had some edges in there, and they tried to make it a bit more aggressive. But there was this very much sensuality with it, and that was difficult to see in the new one. And that was always something that I appreciated very much about the E10s. With this new one, it's kind of losing, you know, that mix that we mentioned earlier. So unfortunately, over the past 4 years, it seems like they've gone downhill a little bit with maybe their decision making, or maybe with the direction that comes from the top. We don't know.
Yeah, I really couldn't say, but it is a shame. that they are not as they're not at the level that we feel they should be, which is, you know, unfortunately. And you're not inside there, you know, you don't know. Maybe they're having their budgets cut, their strings pulled. I don't know what's happening, but certainly it doesn't seem like it's as progressive as, you know, certainly that that Dies et Ans concept that was shown in Geneva several years back.
All right, Eric, then that was it for part two of the Geneva No Show.
Yes.
once again, thank you very much for being part of this, and that we always keep on doing these fun podcast episodes together.
My pleasure, Martin. Thank you.
Just for everybody, you can find Eric on, I think, all big social media networks such as LinkedIn, such as Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, under the handle at Formtrends. On LinkedIn, you'll find him at Eric Galina. Myself, you can find me and, you know, the company behind it at the handle at Concept House, and you can find me on LinkedIn at Martin Groschwald. And please do us a favor when you listen to this, if you download this from iTunes or if you listen to it on Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star review. It will help us to, you know, push us up a little bit in our respective category, which means we will get some more listeners, which is always great for us. If you listen to us on our Podigy website, feel free to comment. We're always happy to see, you know, people engaging with us, but also do that on the social media channels. And be prepared. We already have, I think, a couple of new special episodes coming after you have listened to this episode, which we're very excited about, which is going to be very cool. So you will hear from us back again at the special episodes. And in the meantime, thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much, Eric. And you will hear back from us very soon. Take care,
guys. Thanks a lot,
guys.
Take care.